blesses us in many ways as we learn to walk with Him. But we must never forget that the real goal is to learn to walk with God. And sometimes we mistake the little blessings, the motivators or the mileposts, as the actual goal of our religious exercise, and so we never really learn to walk with God.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
My grandson Elijah has entered the ranks of Cub Scouting. My father owns about 20 acres of woods on the backside of his little farm in Indiana. So while we were there for Christmas, it seemed like a good idea. Caleb and I took Elijah and his younger brother Ben for a walk in the woods Christmas morning. Our goals were twofold. One was to burn off a little bit of the boy's energy. Burned off more of ours, as it turned out. The other was to help Elijah work on his scouting stuff. So we looked at animal tracks, and we identified trees, and we crossed creeks and all kinds of good things like that. And on the way out, walking away from the house across the pasture land into the wood, we were going west. So we told Elijah, see how the sun is on our left, because in our part of the world, the sun is always in the southern half of the sky. And on the way back, coming through the woods, we said, when you can see the sun, see how it's on our right. That shows that we're going opposite the direction we came, so we're going back toward the house, because the sun is always in the southern half of the sky in our part of the world. And we came out of the woods into the open pasture, the house in sight, walking back. Caleb says to Elijah, now Elijah, why should we use the sun to guide ourselves? And without hesitation and with great emphasis, Elijah replied, so I can get a merit badge. It is an understandable confusion, especially in a boy that age. It is a confusion nonetheless. There is the merit, the knowledge that keeps you from getting lost. And there is the merit badge, which is a little colored cloth patch. Oftentimes, rewards are offered as motivation, or awards are given to mark a transition. And it is perilously easy to mistake that motivational something, which is the small thing, with the actual goal, which is the big thing. People do this in religion no less than in scouting. God blesses us in many ways as we learn to walk with Him, but we must never forget that the real goal is to learn to walk with God. And sometimes we mistake the little blessings, the motivators or the mileposts, as the actual goal of our religious exercise, and so we never really learn to walk with God. The merit or the merit badge. Prosperity serves as an example of the kind of thing I'm talking about. Prosperity is a blessing often bestowed by God as we learn to walk with Him. But prosperity is not the object of the exercise. I tell you, most of the time, I think that prosperity is more or less a side effect that occurs when enough people in one place all begin to walk with God. Prosperity comes from that godly experience, but it is not the object. To listen to some people, it is. Why should I do the whole religion thing? So God will bless me with prosperity, obviously. That's why I should do the whole religion thing. But if we settle for prosperity, rather than learning to walk with God, in the end, we gain nothing. O thou fool, this night thy soul is required of thee, and then who shall be all these things? Prosperity is not the only instance in which we make that mistake, the merit badge for the merit. But rather than just listing some other examples, let's look at the psalm that we read in starting out, Psalm 61. It is generally thought that this psalm is written during that time when David, after having already become king of Israel, has to go back into exile because of the rebellion led by his son Absalom, and for a time he must live kind of as he did in the days when Saul was persecuting him and he was driven into the wilderness. It was a miserable time, the more so because the only real solution to the problem is the death of his son. It was a miserable time, but it provided a valuable lesson. When you're lost in the woods, how do you find your way back home? See, the problem is that so many things change. You think you're settled on the throne, things change. You take the loyalty of your son for granted, things change. You are honored by the people, things change. You have wealth and influence. Things change. And in all these sorts of instances, from David's perspective, change stinks. We liked it better the way it was before. Prosperity, security, loyalty, honor. But the world is like this. Things change. They change for us. I'm going to tell you right now, I liked things better when no one had ever heard of a school shooting. Amen? I'm going to tell you something else. I liked it better, at least in the time of my youth, when there wasn't a lot of question, but that police officers were respected and trusted public officials. Amen? I liked it better when a day at school included a prayer, an official Bible verse, and the pledge to the flag. I liked that better. I liked it better, and I'm not trying to condemn anyone here because I know things change. But I liked it better when the divorce rate was so low that the very fact of being a divorcee was at least a little bit surprising to everybody. They tell me terrorism is the new normal. I prefer the old normal. I remember as a kid being able to run free and nobody was the least bit concerned that somebody was going to snatch me or my siblings, steal us away and do terrible things. Sometimes I remember the world of my youth and even my young adulthood, and I feel like all the old landmarks have been taken away and I'm lost in the woods. How will we ever find our way back home? You see, we need at least one thing that doesn't change. Some reliable, dependable, consistent guide. If we're ever going to get out of the woods. That's what David needed too. His landmarks had been taken away, and in his topsy-turvy situation, deep, deep in the woods, on what could David rely for fixed guidance? You know the answer. In a world given to change and degradation, who remains the same forever? We know the answer. And so in the midst of the woods, lost, David raised his face to heaven and he cried out to God. From the end of the earth I call to you, he said. Some scholars interpret that phrase, from the end of the earth, simply to mean from a remote place. I call to you. And perhaps that's all David meant. Certainly he had been driven from his familiar haunts. And though he wasn't really that far away from Jerusalem in the way that we think of distance, remoteness can be measured in more terms than just miles. And maybe that's all he meant. Other scholars think the phrase indicates the border between this world and whatever David thought or feared might come after, from the end of the earth on the brink of the grave, teetering and about to fall from the one into the other. From this place, I call to you. I can live with either interpretation. With faint heart, David said, I call to you. No mystery there. Everything in me says, give up. Call it quits. What's the use anyway? Everything is too far gone to save. From this despondent, discouraged state of mind, I call to you. Here, from the end of the earth, with faint heart, I call to you, O God. And what I call is this: lead me to the rock that is higher than I. David employed other metaphors. He wishes to dwell in God's tent. That may be in part an expression of his desire to return to Jerusalem, where the tabernacle, the tent of the presence of God, was pitched. Certainly the Jewish people put more emphasis on the place side of the holy place than we are used to. You could only worship God in Jerusalem. Only in that one place where, above all other places, David could not currently go. David wished to take shelter beneath the wings of God. What a blessed place. David wished to be able to continue believing that the promise God had given him of a special inheritance would come to pass. And I tell you, if David had had the least idea how special his inheritance was going to be when it was fulfilled in the coming of Jesus Christ, he would have danced even in exile. But however much David knew or didn't know, and whatever shape he thought that inheritance might take, he wanted to believe that it would still arrive. But the most important part of the cry of his heart is this: lead me to the rock that is higher than I. On the interpretation of that phrase, scholars are nearly unanimous. We're not just talking about a rock that rises up higher than my eye level. Talking about a rock that I cannot climb under my own power. It is beyond me. If I am ever to get on top of it, somebody is going to have to put me there. This is the first portion of the lesson David learned and needed to learn when the rug was jerked from under him and everything he thought he could count on failed. He had lived in a blessed state. And it was probably really easy for him to forget what all of us know when we read the story of how he got there. He did not get there on his own steam. God put him in that blessed state. And if he is ever to get back to it, he will have to be led back by God. And to be led by God, we must be willing follow. A lesson we could all learn. We didn't get where we are, or perhaps I should say were, on our own. Because it seems to me that we are losing our state of blessedness in this nation. We lose it more quickly with each passing decade. But we never got there on our own. And we won't get back there on our own either. We mistake many things. Here's one, it seems to me. We mistake the power of democracy. Somewhere along the line in the thinking of many, it has come to seem that democracy, that form of government, is responsible for all the good that we have enjoyed in Western society. Accordingly, we have come to think that if we can only establish democracies in the Middle East and Africa and places like that, everything will be fixed and they'll be happy. And we've been shocked to discover that it just doesn't work. What did we forget? We forgot that our form of government arose from and in the midst of a people who believed in God and were determined to honor Him. And that the form of government in and of itself just doesn't seem to work the same among peoples who do not believe and who are not determined to honor God. We seem confused. How can it be that our own democracy serves us less and less well in these days when we are walking away from our belief in God and our determination to honor Him? No mystery. We didn't get to a state of blessing based on a form of government instituted by men, which is something we could do ourselves. We got to where we were because God led us. And we will never get back there unless we cry for God to lead us to the rock that is higher than I. And unless we are willing, genuinely, sincerely willing to follow Him when He leads. That is only the first half of the lesson. David wanted long life. He wanted prosperity. He wanted all those other things that he mentioned in the course of his prayer in Psalm 61. See, the little kids wore my microphone for Christmas Eve, which is fine, except that it doesn't fit my ear now. I'm working on it. Anybody got a roll of duct tape? I think the real lesson is to be found in verse 7. David wanted to abide in the presence of God forever. Now, I need us to understand, David did not somehow foolishly plan to go on living in his present state forever. He did not think that was going to happen. But he did want to abide in the presence of God forever. David is beginning to get the idea. And maybe it involves the whole concept of a life that comes after this life ends. There was great argument among the Jewish people in the days of David. Is there something past the grave or is there not? It was not all thought the same. But if you read all of the Psalms, you begin to get the hints, and many of them are more direct than this could be if it's considered a hint, that David believed that there was something afterward. He was beginning to get that idea, I think. But at least he was beginning to get this idea. The plan of God was not limited to the little handful of years that he himself occupied on the earth. The special place that God had chosen for David in the fulfilling of the covenant that God made with Abraham a long time before, the blessings of which would continue to unfold for a long time after. In the quest to fulfill that covenant, David was at long last beginning to realize that the throne and the wealth and the fame and the influence were secondary, simply tools to be used in fulfilling the plans of God. And the real thing, in time or in eternity, real thing is to walk with God. Wherever it may be, this rock that is higher than I, whatever circumstances may exist on its peak or roil around the valleys that surround it in any given moment, the real thing about that place is that God is there, and when I am led and lifted up to that place, I walk with God. Is the object of the exercise. Why should I, or anyone else, learn that the sun is always in the southern half of the sky in our part of the world, so we don't get lost? the world is easy to get lost in. Everything changes. And so seldom it seems for the better. The old landmarks are taken away. Why should I do the whole religion thing so I don't get lost? Which is only another way of saying that in the midst of all the changes, I may walk with God and be led to the rock that is higher than I. More changes are coming, just in case you thought we were through. More changes are coming. There will be changes in 2016, and there will be changes beyond that if the world endures, and ultimately this whole world will be reduced to ashes and vapor, which is a fairly significant change in itself. And on that day, I hope still to be walking with God and to be firmly established on a rock that is so much higher than I. And for me, the rock has acquired a name not yet known to David in the day when he composed this psalm. For Jesus is my rock. He is my foundation. He is the stone which the builders rejected, which nevertheless became the cornerstone in the edifice of God's plan. He is a stone of stumbling and defense to the dark, dreary, lost world. But he is the rock of salvation to me. And I have been led to the rock that is higher than I. May we all be so led. And may our walk with God shine in a way that all who know us may be so led to the rock.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.